Hello, this is Tim Schwartz, and welcome to the Life After Blindness podcast. This week, I discussed some recent news items with Lauren Hayes from Accessibility Oz. This is episode number 7, and your Life After Blindness journey continues right now. Hello and welcome to Life After Blindness. This is the podcast where we are dedicated to the exploration of an enabled life with blindness. I am your host, Tim Schwartz, and I'd like to thank you very much for joining me once again for another episode of Life After Blindness. To get links to anything that I talk about in today's episode, you can find those by visiting lifeafterblindness.com/7. I'd like to extend a personal thanks to those who have continued to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can find the links to those on the website, and you can follow us on Twitter at LabCast. That's LabCast. Now, this week, I have a very special guest from Australia. Her name is Lauren Hayes. She's here to talk with me about some recent news items involving the blind and visually impaired community. First, we'll be talking about a blind marathon runner who recently ran in the Boston Marathon and used the Aira service technology that we've talked about recently on the podcast. So you definitely want to stay tuned for us talking about him stress testing Aira and seeing what it could do for him during the Boston Marathon. I also will talk to Lauren about 3D printing technology, where in a hospital in Brazil, a blind couple was able to have a 3D printout of their ultrasound in each of the trimesters of the wife's pregnancy. And so we'll talk a little bit about that technology and what it means not only to a couple like that who's having a child, but what 3D printing technology can mean for the blind going forward. We'll wrap up our conversation by talking about a new app available in Australia called Movie Reading. Now, Lauren and the company that she works for, Accessibility Oz, which you can find at accessibilityoz.com, that's accessibilityoz.com, they deal with accessible websites or maybe non-accessible websites. And so that's why I wanted to have her on to talk about this app and what it can do not only for Australians going to the cinema, but to talk about its accessibility as far as the app as well as their website. So again, stay tuned to listen to Lauren talk to me about Movie Reading in Australia. Now, a couple of housekeeping notes that I want to make sure to make everybody aware of here at the top of the podcast. I recently did a poll between the app Verail as well as on the Twitter page to see what people thought about the speed of voiceover when I've been doing reviews of apps recently. And the agreement came to that I'm going a little bit fast with 70% or more. So going forward, I just want to let everybody know, based on the feedback I've received from Twitter, Verail, as well as email feedback, I'm going to try to slow that down going forward, start maybe at 60% and see how that feels to everybody, and see if that makes any kind of a difference to the reviews going forward. I also want to let everybody know that I am continuing to speak with multiple people about doing spotlight interviews. And so it's just a matter of time that we'll be getting those back up again. I'm hoping to have one come out next week, but it's just a matter of getting people scheduled. We have many, many people that want to do spotlight interviews and many people that I want to bring to you and tell you their stories. So be looking forward to that. Hopefully starting next week, I'll be getting another spotlight interview out for everyone to enjoy. And then in a couple of weeks for the next episode of the podcast, be sure to listen back again as I talk with Holly Bonner from blindmotherhood.com. So it'll be kind of the opposite point of view from what Derek Daniel gave us a couple of weeks ago from the blind father's point of view. Holly will be here to talk with us about the blind mother's point of view. So be sure to come back and listen to that here in a couple of weeks. All right, so that's all the things I wanted to talk with you about here at the top of the episode. Let's get into the news with Lauren Hayes. Joining me this week on the Life After Blindness podcast to discuss the recent news of the last couple weeks is a musician, writer, and blogger, among many other things, for Accessibility Oz from Australia, Lauren Hayes. Lauren, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me.
first, I wanted to get your opinion about a story from the U.S. this week about the Boston Marathon. A gentleman by the name of Eric Manser, who actually works for IBM and does some accessibility work for them, recently ran the Boston Marathon and used the technology called Aira. Now, people who have listened to the podcast recently are familiar with us talking about Aira. Briefly, Aira is a paid service similar to OnStar for a vehicle here in the States, where you pay for the service. You get glasses that are like Google Glasses or are Google Glasses, and you can contact this service. You get an agent on the line, and they can give you specific help and help you with any of your questions about finding things around you and helping you navigate your surroundings. And so what Eric Manser wanted to do was kind of stress test this service and see how far they could really take it and take the technology as far as the internet signal and just the ability to find things. And so he wanted to complete the entire Boston Marathon using the Iris service. Lauren, I wanted to kind of get your take on this. Just, of course, number one, your feelings on using something like this for a marathon, but then just kind of your feelings in general about a service like this. I know it's not in Australia yet, but hopefully it'll come there, sometime in the future, or a service like it. But what are your general feelings about using this not only as something for a marathon, which I know is kind of a bigger thing because it was a stress test, but and just kind of using this in general as a blind person?
I think for a marathon, that, like, to me, that's just crazy, but that's probably more because any kind of sport or exercise and I are not really very good friends. And so I could think of other things that I would probably want to test it on than a marathon. But look, good on him. You know, I think what a great way to put it through its paces. And from what the article said, it certainly did. And they experienced some glitches along the way, but it at the same time provided some really good feedback about how they could improve things, particularly because the marathon kind of environment would be fairly sort of intense and there's lots of stuff going on, and I know that their Bluetooth headset cut out, so sometimes Eric Manser couldn't hear his agent, the person that he was connected to, and then sometimes she couldn't see his video. So it really exposed some of the things that need a bit of work, and so I think in the long run, hopefully what they've done is a good thing. I guess in terms of using an app like this more generally, probably the closest thing that we have at the moment here would be the Be My Eyes app. And I haven't used it personally, but I know people who have, and they found it really useful for things like looking at computer screens. If JAWS or their screen reader has stopped talking, then someone can check and see what's going on. And so I think that it's, I don't know, I think I'm in two minds about it in some ways. And maybe once I've had a go at it, I might think differently, but I think it's that sort of thing of having a complete stranger looking. I know they're not obviously going to come and, I don't know, come to your house or whatever, but they're seeing where you live, and because they have your GPS location, I don't know, it's just part of me goes, is that a bit creepy? But then in other ways, if I was in an unfamiliar space and just wanted a bit of direction or just wanted something read quickly, like a used by date on something, then it could be really useful. So, yeah, I don't really know either way. I'm a little bit on the fence at the moment, I think.
And I think that's a opinion that a lot of people have with this. The more I've researched it, the more I've heard about Aira and its service, the more I'm liking it. When I first heard about it, I wasn't quite sure about it. I wasn't sure about the price point. I wasn't sure, like you were talking about, with the privacy and security of it. But the more I read about it, the more I really kind of like it. And I'm still a little iffy on the price point, but I get it. They've got to charge what they need to charge to make this service get off the ground and continue. So I understand that. But just some of the examples I've heard, like you were talking about, something as simple as checking dates on a particular package or checking nutrition facts or just needing something read, all the way up to examples that we gave on one of our previous podcasts, where we talked about a gentleman who was able to navigate from his seat on an airplane all the way to baggage claim. And they helped him navigate through the terminal, helped him to understand what restaurants were around, where the little kiosks were in the airport terminal, and helped him, you know, find the signs that let him the baggage claim, and helped him find his bags and all the way out to the door to a taxi. So that extreme, you know, from one end to the other, I think that there's a lot of good use case for a service like this. Obviously, like you said, doing this for a marathon is big, and that did expose a lot of things that they could work on. But I think that's the point of doing a stress test like that, is just to see, okay, what are the limits of what we really can do? What if somebody is out there walking around for not just, you know, 5, 10, 20 minutes at a time where we're helping them, you know, on spot things, but if they're out there for 2-3 hours doing something, can we really help them with our service? And so I commend them for at least giving it a shot with him, because they did do this in coordination with each other. They had been planning this, from what I understand and reading a couple articles, this had been planned for a while to work on this with a particular agent with Mr. Manzer. And so, you know, they really tried hard to see what they could do with this. So, you know, I commend them for giving that a try.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think it might be something like, if you, I could imagine, say you wanted to go to a sports game or a concert or something, it was at a big stadium where there were going to be heaps of people, it was going to be noisy and stuff. Having assistance at a venue like that could be really, really beneficial. And the airport thing is really amazing as well. And again, this is kind of why I'm in two minds, is that people who work in these kinds of environments are paid to, sure, they've got to be there to, you know, run the airport, but customer service is a really big part of that, or working in a theatre or a stadium or whatever it might be. And so I don't think it would happen, but I would hate to see that venue staff sort of saying, oh, that they've got the app, so we're not going to help them, and we'll just kind of leave them to their own devices, where, you know, because some people might prefer to receive assistance from excuse me, from someone at the venue rather than relying on an app. So hopefully it won't take away people's choice as to how they access services.
Well, that is one of the nice things about Aira that I know they have mentioned, where they try to give the user that choice to say, okay, you contact us, you ask us the questions, you tell us what you need of us, and it's really up to you. They've said in some releases that they're not going to tell you whether a light is changed for you to cross the street. They're not going to tell you necessarily the traffic's coming, although you can ask them. And if you ask them a direct question, they will answer the direct question. But to offer up information, they're not just going to offer it and say, hey, by the way, because they have been trained in such a way where they know that you have your own training, that you've been trained to, you know, do your own orientation and mobility, and that they respect that you're going to use that. And so their service model, at least as far as what they've said so far, is that they're going to wait for you to ask the question. And so I kind of like that, because that gives you the ability, like you were talking about, if you want to use the services of an airport or the facility that you're at, you have that choice. If you want to put on the glasses and dial up the app and call them for service and support, you have that choice. So I think it's interesting, and I agree with you. I think there's two minds on this. And I think we will get more information. The more they test it, the more they use it, the more people that use it. And as time goes on, you know, if they do more stress tests like this with the marathons and things, we'll really get a better picture of how a service like this can be used.
Yeah, and I like the fact that they're professionally trained as well. Because I know Be My Eyes and other apps, like, is it Bespecular or
Bespecular? Correct. Yeah, they're volunteers.
Yeah. They're volunteers, and so you know, and that's great. But if these guys are professionals and they're being paid to do that, and they've got some really specific training around blindness and kind of how we might be using the service, that kind of takes it to a different level, I think.
So from one bit of technology for the blind to another, although this one's not specific to the blind, but boy, is it helpful. There was a story recently out of Brazil in a hospital in Rio de Janeiro where a doctor for the first time has an ultrasound machine with a built-in 3D printer. So there's been 3D printers in the past for medical purposes, but not where it's built right into the machine. And so in this case, there was a blind couple in Brazil, of course, having a child, and they worked with their doctor to have 3D ultrasound pictures printed in each trimester of the wife's pregnancy. And the doctor, you know, knew this going in, had worked with them very specifically on this. And again, the very first ultrasound machine with built-in 3D printing technology. Now, obviously this, you know, 3D technology, 3D printing technology has been around for a while and has other use cases. But in a case like this, where you can print it for someone who's blind, or a couple in this case who's blind and having a child, really is a big deal. Lauren, I want to kind of get your opinion first as to just this story and how incredible this is that these you know, soon-to-be parents were able to feel a 3D rendering of, you know, their child in the womb, but then just also kind of the impact or the implication, I guess, of this kind of technology going forward for the blind.
Yeah, I think it's a great story, and I'm, you know, not looking at having kids at this stage, but I have friends who have kids or are thinking about having kids and who are blind, and I think that this would be a great thing. I've always struggled with 2D pictures and kind of wrapping my head around how do you sort of convert the 2D to the 3D. Like, it just never really made sense, and so I think that this is just going to really be a bit of a game changer. And I particularly like the fact that it's a mainstream thing. It's not like they've gone, oh, let's just build like a separate special bit of technology for blind people. It's something that everybody can use, and it just happens to make things a lot more accessible for us.
And especially since 3D printing lately has become a lot less expensive. You can get 3D printers, at least in the States, for, you know, $100, a couple hundred dollars, and really, you know, obviously better ones for a few hundred dollars or more. But the cost of the technology has come way down to even just do it in the home. But then adding to that, to have it in a medical field where, like you said, it's not just a, oh, we can maybe do this for the blind and visually impaired, you know, separately, and it's going to cost, you know, extra or whatever. It's built in, it's out of the box, as they say. And to be able to do that for anybody, you know, 3D print something like this, I just think is really neat and a really big deal. My daughter is now 4, almost 5 years old. I know this technology was there when she was, you know, before she was born, but my wife and I didn't really think to ask for something like this. And if we had, I don't think that anybody where we live was going to be able to do something like this. So I think it's really interesting that in such a short time, the 3D printing technology has come this far where they can do something like this. Now, I know going forward, this obviously can have, you know, implications for other use cases. And I know you and I talked before the podcast about other things that that might be able to be used for this. So give me a little bit of your opinion about, you know, maybe other things that you could see this being useful for.
So, for example, I had to have some x-rays done a few weeks ago. I had a neck injury, and they just wanted to check what was going on. So I got some scans done, and they found that at the top of my spine there was a little bit of disc degeneration. So one of the discs is a little bit shorter than it's supposed to be. It's nothing really serious. It's just something that happens to people as, you know, as they get older, and can happen with younger people as well. But it still was kind of hard to imagine, you know, because I did biology at school and looked at a bit of anatomy when I did psychology, but never really quite grasp all of that, those sorts of concepts. And so I thought, oh, you know, when I saw the story about this couple, wouldn't it be great if there was a way to 3D print those scans so I could look at the shape of my spinal cord and see where the degeneration is and what that looks like? Because, you know, if I could see, I'd be able to look directly at those films and understand what was going on. So I think that would be awesome. And then just 3D printing more broadly outside of the medical field, you know, as you're saying, it's becoming more accessible in the home, but I'm thinking from an education perspective in schools where you've got perhaps mathematical diagrams that are 2D, or perhaps maps that are used in geography, or diagrams in science, if you could make those 3D, then that would really help with understanding certain concepts, I think. And I think, you know, if I had had that kind of thing at school, who knows, maybe I might have been more keen to go on and study science or maths at a higher level than I did.
And I think that's definitely true, to be able to expand the 3D printing technology beyond the medical field. I mean, I think it's very important there, especially for somebody who's blind or visually impaired, to be able to feel what it is that the doctor's talking about. And even for sighted people, I think that would be important, because sometimes even for someone sighted, it's hard to understand what the doctor's explaining. And so be able to put it in a 3D model, you know, to have that visual aid to help you, sighted or not. I think that that's very important to help medically. But then, as you said, from an educational standpoint, you know, it's really interesting to be able to think, okay, as you said, you can print graphs or other mathematical, you know, things as far as that goes for science, be able to print different things, even printing, you know, maybe replicas of animals and things like that. Again, like you said, not specific to the blind. That could be something that could be sighted and blind alike. It's mainstream. Mm. It's out of the box, where even kids with vision could use this kind of technology. So it's not like it has to be special for the blind, that it could be something that all kids could use, all adults could use, and use as an educational tool. So again, I commend this doctor for doing this with this couple and being able to offer this as a service literally right out of the box and print this with their ultrasound and be able to give them such a special gift. But again, their special gift could be something that could really help out everybody else as this technology goes forward.
Yeah, exactly.
So then the other thing I wanted to talk with you specifically about this week, Lauren, is there was some recent news out of Australia about an app called Movie Reading. Now, what this app does is it syncs up audio description with a movie at the local cinema. So this technology isn't necessarily new. I've seen it in other apps in other countries. I've seen them try it in the States. As a matter of fact, I believe the Disney Anywhere app has this technology in the US App Store. I'm not sure if that's available in other app stores, but you can do that where you can launch the Disney Anywhere app. And then if you have a Disney movie playing on TV, the app will sync the audio description to the movie and play it along with it. And you can use that at home or in the cinema or anywhere. As long as you're playing the movie, the app will sync the description. And it sounds like that's kind of what Movie Reading is trying to do for you guys down in Australia, to allow you a description ability in the theater. So my first question is, if you don't mind, if you can give us a little bit of a background as far as what is your availability to audio description when you go to a movie theater in Australia, and then if you can go from there to talking a little bit about this app and what you found when you looked into it and this company.
Sure. So we've had audio description available through headsets, as you guys have, and I think that came into cinemas in about 2009 or 2010 and has kind of gradually been introduced since then. I have to be honest and say that I have never actually taken advantage of that service. I've seen plenty of movies, you know, once they're on DVD, etc., but I've never actually used that audio description in cinemas. A few years ago, had wanted to, and I called my local cinema and I said, I want to see this film with the audio description. And they said, oh, you mean like the thing for deaf people? So they just didn't have a clue. And I think even now that's still people's experience, is that cinema staff aren't properly educated about audio description and captioning and the difference. And you hear of people's headsets not working when they're in the cinema, and so then they're not able to, you know, take advantage of the experience of that. And so the Movie Reading app seems like it will be a really great way to minimize some of those problems, because you download the audio described track onto your phone before you go into the cinema, and then once the movie starts, you click play or okay or something, and it will sync with the, it listens to the the soundtrack that's through the speakers and it will match up. So it means, say, if you come to the movie late, it will catch up for you, even though you've got, because you put the phone into airplane mode, I believe, before you use the app. But because you've pre-downloaded the track, you don't need to be connected to your data to access it. So it means you can bring your own device, your own headphones. You have everything ready to go. And so it's going to eliminate some of those issues of staff not understanding what's going on, or the headsets not working. Also, perhaps more spontaneity. So you might be out with friends and you think, hey, let's go to the movies this afternoon. And you can just do that because the track is there for you to download. Whereas at the moment, I think I don't know if the audio description is available at every screening. I'm not actually quite clear on that, but I don't know if they have the audio description at certain times, if there's a more of a limitation around that.
So you're talking about when you actually go to a theater, and theaters that do offer their own audio description, they're not necessarily offering it at every showtime. So that might be beneficial then in that case, where the movie reading app, all you need is the file downloaded, the app, and the movie running in the background. So you don't necessarily have to wait for a certain showtime.
Yeah, that's right.
The app itself, and just navigating it as an app without actually having to sync anything. My first question is, what was your opinion of the accessibility of the app itself? And then I know we talked about this again a little bit before the podcast. After you talk about the accessibility of the app itself, talk to me about the accessibility of trying to test the app with this company's website, because I do know they have a way you can test the syncing with the video on their website. And so talk to me about the accessibility of the app versus the accessibility of trying to sync this with their website and what their website was about.
Sure. So the app itself is very accessible. There are a few tabs at the bottom of the screen that will do different things. So there's a market tab, and that lists all the movies with tracks that you can download. And I should point out that it's not just for audio description, it's also for captioning. So if you have a hearing impairment, then you can also download the caption track, I guess. I don't know what you would call it, but you can download that, and it will also sync when you're in the movie, so you can read the captioning on your phone without having to look at the movie screen. And so I think it tells you whether it's got the audio description or the captioning. And then you have a movies tab, and that is a tab where you access the things you have downloaded. So once you go into the cinema, you would go to the movies tab and find the one you want and click that. And then I think when the movie starts, it says click OK to play the track. And when I first opened it, I wasn't quite clear on what everything did, but there is a quick start user guide that you can access through the app, and it explains everything very clearly. There were no accessibility glitches that I experienced with VoiceOver, at least, looking through the app. So once I kind of sussed out how everything worked, I thought that I would try their compatibility test. So on the app, it says through using a laptop or another device, you go to the movie reading website, and there's a sample of a movie that you can play, and it will sync with your phone, and hopefully you can get the audio description or the captioning, and you can make sure that everything's working before you go off to the cinema. So I went to the website on my computer, and this is where I run into some real accessibility difficulties. So the app itself, the instructions weren't clear about where on the web page you would find the sample video to play. So I had a browse through the web page, and I eventually found it in the, I think it was How It Works. There was a section there, and it had a heading with the compatibility test, and it said, click, play the video on this page to test with the app. But then I couldn't find any play buttons or media, embedded media player, or any links to the video at all. And I tried both with Firefox and Internet Explorer using JAWS. Admittedly, I haven't tried with NVDA or with Safari. So I need to check that out and have a look. But with both browsers, I couldn't find the video. And on the main homepage, it also had links to movies that had been released with the audio description and captioning tracks. And they weren't clearly labeled. They were just these sort of graphical links with a bunch of letters and numbers that made no sense. So I emailed them to inform them that there were some accessibility difficulties, and hopefully they'll take that on board. And I would encourage anyone in Australia listening to check out the app and the website for yourself and provide feedback, whether it's positive or negative, because I think this app has a lot of potential, and it's important that we encourage the developers to keep working on it, and for the website as well.
Absolutely. And I should point out that Lauren, the company that she works for, Accessibility Oz, this is kind of your bread and butter there, that when it comes to website accessibility and just all things accessibility wise, this is what you guys do. This is what you look at. So when you're looking at that website, you kind of know what you're looking for, not just as a blind person, but from the standpoint of, these are the things we would want to test for. These are the things my company would look at. And so you're kind of looking at it through that lens, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. So Accessibility Oz is a web accessibility company. And one of the things that we do is test websites to ensure that they meet the web content accessibility guidelines. And so I guess even before I was working with them, obviously being blind, I would notice when things weren't accessible, but now I feel like I'm even more on the lookout for that kind of stuff, and I notice when things need a little bit of work, or, you know, where there's room for improvement.
Again, another reason why I wanted to have you on, to just talk about the accessibility of not just the app, but their website, as well as the ability of an app like this. And from what you say, it does have a lot of potential. I know here in the States, as far as description goes in theaters, there are FCC regulations now, only within the last, I think, couple of years, that require any theater that does a digital screening. So if it's the old, you know, reels in a theater, which is, I'm sure, only like 5% of the theaters probably at this point, they are not required. But if you're a digital movie theater, you're required to have audio description in every theater with every screening of every movie. And so something like this would be nice, but it's not as necessary as maybe as it once was. And like you mentioned a little bit ago, maybe not all the theaters in Australia have audio description. And even if they do, they may not have it for every showtime. So to be able to have this technology in your pocket, like you said, with your own headphones and your own device, to walk in and say, okay, I've got the audio description track here, I just got to hit a button and it's going to work, or in theory it should work. I think that's a really, you know, really cool idea, until you guys get to a point where every theater just has something, you know what I mean? And it's just in place. So for now, I think this is a potentially good, you know, good application for this type of technology, or for, you know, being able to have audio describe movies. But again, the app sounds like it's accessible, but they just need to do some work on the website, and hopefully they'll take your email to heart and make some adjustments. And like you said, I invite any of our Australian listeners. I know there are a few of you out there from checking the stats on the website. So the few of you that are out there, if you guys could definitely take a look at this and help Lauren with this, and write them an email to the folks there at Movie Reading. I, as always, will have links to their website as well as everything else in our show notes. And so go take a look, see what you guys all think, and send them an email. Let them know, you know, let them know that this isn't quite accessible and that you want to be able to test it as well. I think that that's really important. So Lauren, I want to thank you very much for coming on the podcast. Of course, if anybody wants to get in contact with you or get more information about you, where can they do that?
Sure. So I actually don't use Twitter. So unfortunately you can't follow me on Twitter, but our Accessibility Oz webpage address is just www.accessibilityoz.com. So that's AccessibilityOz, or OZ for the American folks, .com. We also have a blog called accessibility voices that I'd like to plug. And the address for that is a11yvoices.com. So a numbers 11, letter Y, voices.com. And that blog focuses on reviews of websites and apps in terms of their accessibility. And we are always looking for bloggers to contribute to that site, and you'll be paid for the articles that you write. So if you have a review of an app or a website that you would like to contribute, then please get in touch. You'll find the contact details for Accessibility Oz both on the Accessibility Voices and also on our main homepage as well.
Lauren, again, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's been fun.
And thank you for listening to the Life After Blindness podcast. Again, you can find the show notes by going to lifeafterblindness.com/7. And while you're on the website, you can find links to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. If you have any comments or suggestions for me, you can send your emails to tim@lifeafterblindness.com. Please listen again next time as together we continue to find that there truly can be a life after blindness. Take care, everybody.